Totally Football Show. Boom! City blow the title race slightly ajar with a mighty win at the Etihad, putting two goals past the Liverpool side that had previously shipped almost as little as the people who won the government's ferry contract. This game also featured a dodgy company, but what else can we conclude from Thursday's extravaganza? Plus, transfers. The German press are laughing at us again over Chelsea's Pulisic move. Should they be? And FA Cup. We've got the pick of the third round fixtures. It's all in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Here we are in this hollowed-out husk that once was Jazz FM, ready for some late-night hot takes on that sizzling set to at the Etihad. With us, a one Sasha Gurionov.
Still hot and emotional.
A Lindsay Hooper.
Not so hot. It's quite cold in here.
Kind of, though, you know.
I'm feeling the warmth from Sasha.
Great news. James Horncastle's here.
That is I.
And he's sharing a microphone with Tom Williams.
Hello, James.
Hi, Tom. How are you, boys?
Good. Are you trying to get us to both lunge at the microphone at once?
So they're sharing a microphone, and we've all just been sharing an exciting football experience live from the Etihad, the big clash of the top two in the Premier League. 2-1 it finished to Man City, narrowing the gap at the top to a mere 4 points. Did you enjoy it, Lindsay?
I very much enjoyed it. I thought it was a good match. I mean, it wasn't quality throughout, I have to say. There were moments when I was thinking, are we going to get more shots on target? But they came. And I think both teams sitting on the fence a little bit, because I thought that both teams brought something to the party. Obviously, Manchester City now have closed that gap and the title race is back on.
Is
I think
it?
As a neutral, that's what you want to see. Yeah, it is. I think 4 points between now and the end of the season is nothing. And I think that it makes it very exciting now between now and May.
While Liverpool go out defeated in this game, I do think that they'll probably look back on it and thought there's actually not that much between these two sides. Mm-hmm. If you reflect on how everything went, they had, what, a couple of shots cleared off or around the goal line. There's a decent chance that if the Premier League had video assistant referee, that Vincent Kompany would have been sent off as well. It's an interesting one. I can see why many people think that City deserved it. But at the same time, I think this goes to show that this is going to be very close from right until now, the end of the season.
Tom?
One thing we've seen in recent encounters with Liverpool is that Guardiola has changed his tactics. He's so fearful of that front three, as we all saw in the Man City documentary. Whereas I thought tonight we saw more of the old style Man City, if you like, you know, pressing more aggressively, the same sort of 4-3-3 formation. And if anyone was cautious, it was Jurgen Klopp with the three-man midfield of Wijnaldum, Henderson and Milner, the grafters. So you know, what could have been a huge win for Liverpool had they won, it ends up being a really, really important win for City. I think both in the sense that it kickstarts their title defence, or it reinvigorates their title defence, but also it shows that they can play the way they want to play against a team like Liverpool and still come through on top.
Mm. Sasha, you took a moment or two to collect yourself after this game. What do you think the impact's going to be on Liverpool's players?
I think Liverpool did not play well tonight. I think the City pressing did definitely put them off the game. If you look at the first half, I thought it was pretty much a complete mess. Liverpool only really put together one good passing move, which led to that ridiculous Stones clearance at Edison and off his line. I think it was 11 millimetres that the ball stayed in by. But I think second half, Liverpool obviously felt there was a weakness that Edison had coming out, and he hesitated a number of occasions, which probably contributed to the Liverpool goal as well. But I think you should look at it as a huge psychological boost for City here, because I think what we've seen over last year and a bit, maybe even longer, is that Klopp's definitely inside Pep's head. And I think after today, Pep can look at himself and maybe, you know, give himself a lot more confidence about what he does, but about his methods. I mean, he had a few defeats recently as well. And for him to collect his team for this big match and actually come through it and defend. I mean, yes, there were goal mouth scrambles, but City players were putting their bodies on the line. It was completely committed performance. And also, I think it's the best Sané played in quite some time in a big match.
Mm. What did you make of Lovren's performance?
I think he was severely affected by the booking early doors. I think after that he defended with certain hesitation, and we saw how Sané got past him a couple of times, and generally he didn't really give an air of being completely confident in what he was doing.
Right, which is not something that usually seems to trouble him. Siobhan Walsh saying, is Lovren the most deluded player just now? Based on those you've interviewed during your career, who has been the most deluded player?
Nicholas Bentner.
Oh, well, that's
easy.
But was it delusional or was it some kind of performance art?
Delusion.
Really?
A clear delusion.
What did he say to you?
I've sat down with him a couple of times when he was in the Premier League, and he ranked himself much higher than I think the rest of us did.
Yes.
And even recently, he's been like horseback, hasn't he? Hair in the wind, those sorts of pictures. Yeah, I imagine that he has got a shrine to himself somewhere.
Don't you?
No, clearly you have.
But okay, so now, Sash, would you agree with James Horncastle's take that in many ways Liverpool were as good, if not better, than City tonight, but just didn't have the luck of the draw?
As you could see, it was a game of very fine margins. I mean, you could look at Aguero's finish. I mean, that was eye of a needle sort of finish. If you look at Sané's goal, I mean, that's, you know, 10 centimetres, well, even 5 centimetres either way, that wider, that doesn't go in. So these two teams are very evenly matched. And I think, you know, as they are both at the top and 4 points apart, you're going to have a title race.
Well, this is the thing. I mean, big picture, if you're a Liverpool fan, you would take being 4 points ahead of City after playing City twice, rather than, I mean, that's exceeded a lot of people's expectations, even given what everyone thought about Liverpool with the signings that they made, because they were coming off a Champions League final. As I said before, they come out of this game, if anything, thinking, you know, we can match City's results from now on the end of the season.
There's been a lot of exceeding expectations in the Premier League already, though. I mean, and you have to bring Spurs back into that as well. You know, 15 wins from opening 20. Mm. And I think there was a stat doing the rounds about any teams that had achieved that had pretty much gone on to either win the title or certainly be in the title race come the end of the season. So you can't discount Spurs if you're looking at that alone. But I mean, what I think this match showed is that there is very fine margins between the top teams now. I mean, you can't really separate them on fitness. The quality and strength in depth for these two teams in particular, I think you look at the benches and you think, well, yeah, I mean, they're quite evenly matched. Both managers going into this, but you know, very bullheaded, but both very generous in saying, you're the best in the world. No, you're the best in the world. You know, I thought that was all mind games, I have to say, Sash. So where do you find these margins, fine margins between them? And what you've picked upon is these like centimetres. Mm. I mean, that's literally what it came down to in terms of the clinicalness tonight.
If Lovren marked the kind of nadir in terms of performances at the Etihad, who were the stars? Was it Leroy Sané? Would he be one of your outstanding performers?
Yeah, Sané, very effective. I mean, Fernandinho was, I mean, you know, we know how much City have missed him in recent weeks. I mean, he's been identified as perhaps the main reason for that poor run of form that they went through. He was absolutely fantastic. I thought Bernardo Silva as well. Mm. I mean, we know what a wonderful footballer Bernardo Silva is, but I thought that you know, the hard yards that he put in, that the graft that he put in, even Vincent Kompany, I mean, he should have been sent off for that challenge on Salah. It was a really, really poor challenge, but in a weird way, the fact that he got away with that helped to set the tone. And Salah, we didn't really see him at all after that. And I wouldn't go as far as to say that it was that challenge that sort of took him out of the game, but I think it sort of helped set the tempo for City, and certainly the way that Kompany defended helped to do that as well.
And as we've got Liverpool fans in the room, it'd be interesting to put to them, you know, how disappointed were you that Klopp didn't bring on Shaqiri that bit earlier? Did he have enough time?
Well, you could see that Liverpool equalised, first of all, with about 23 minutes to go, and then they conceded a few minutes later. So, I mean, you could arguably say that at that stage, Liverpool need a draw. It's their only goal down. You know, they don't really need to go hell for leather that early. So I think Klopp was probably waiting to see how the game pans out here. And I don't think I can really fault him for that. And after Shaqiri came on, I don't really think he made that much of a difference, to be honest. Again, it's a very, very tight game. There wasn't any space. City were defending in very big numbers towards the end. So maybe you could argue, and it would have taken a moment of genius from someone like Shaqiri to thread that ball through. But he didn't really have the time to do that, I don't think.
Can we maybe say, and this probably reflects better on City than on Liverpool, that I thought Alisson played pretty damn well tonight, and I thought he was quite unlucky not to keep a clean sheet. I think both goals that City scored, the Aguero one was really acute angle, roof of the net, quite close to him. I don't think he could have got his arms up in time. And then again, Sané practically put it where the only place he could. I think that probably shows
it's the first
City
time
in a good
he's conceded twice in a match season. All season.
Yeah. And in the league.
Yeah. But also, 2 one-on-one saves in the last 10 minutes to keep Liverpool in it, just as City threatened, you know, to make it 3-1 or even 4-1. And I think, you know, Alisson comes out of the game with great credit. This is not an absolutely awful end-of-season result for Liverpool, and they now have a bit of a break to pull themselves together. I think they will rest players against Wolves in the FA Cup. And also, another thing Lindsay was saying in terms of, you know, seeing the bigger picture, between now and the end of the season, Liverpool have, 17 matches. They only play the other top six teams three times.
That's what you think, Sash. Lindsay, what were your two conclusions about this game?
My two conclusions were Arsenal fans breathing a sigh of relief because the unbeaten Invincibles is gone.
Yeah.
So I made a mental note of that when the final whistle went. And also, coming back to the goalkeepers, because Cheech, the Brazil coach, was there watching. Alisson, he's number one, but checking out Edison. Obviously, other players on the pitch, Firmino, different people that he wants to watch. I mean, he must have been having a brilliant night. But, you know, who comes out on top? I would say that Alisson won that battle. There was no threat to his number one shirt, was there?
I think, if anything, Edison showed a lot of uncertainty and a lot of... He has done these things this season where he just switches off. You know, those penalties he gave away. Perhaps he doesn't have, because he doesn't have to do that much. But City have been leaking goals, whereas Alisson's, I think, conceded goals as half the XG or something like that. So, yeah, Alisson is on top.
Sash, just one thing. Why do you think Liverpool started so poorly? Because the first half from them was really disappointing, huh?
I think part of it is down to City, because I think City really got into Liverpool's faces. I also think mentality. When City and Liverpool drew 0-0 at Anfield, that was a weak moment in Liverpool's season, and City should have gone for Liverpool. I think tonight, Liverpool should have probably been a little bit more aggressive. In the previous games we saw last season, they actually managed to isolate Fernandinho quite well. Today, with that midfield, they were just sat too deep to put any pressure on Fernandinho.
Yeah, and you have to give credit to City and Pep for learning the lessons.
Yes.
Because Fernandinho, you know, the fact that they had him back, he played so well this evening. But Bernardo Silva just alongside, I mean, those two together were proper workhorses for City tonight. And it was very, very difficult for Liverpool to make any breakthroughs. And I also felt that Salah has been more effective when he's been in more of that central role in recent games. But of course, he was back out on the right again. I know that they were targeting what they perceived to be a weakness with Laporte being out on the left flank. You know, was that going to be an area that Salah could expose? He made great runs. There was quite a lot that, you know, they managed to get out of the game. But I just felt that there was something taken away as well by the trying to counteract this very defensive City lineup to begin with. And I didn't think it impinged on players, like, even though Sterling didn't manage to score against his former club again, he still managed to get the space, didn't he? And Sané was great.
And I think but one thing you have to note on that, Liverpool have been playing a 4-2-3-1, a 4-4-2 kind of formation in recent weeks. But Klopp, I think, was never confident enough that won't leave too much space when you play against someone like City. So that's why I think he's going back to three in the middle. But I would have played a bit more proactive three in the middle.
Mm.
Right. Well, 12 days or so to ponder that and other conclusions from this monumental game. 4 points then the gap between the top two in the Premier League. Later on, in today's show, we'll be considering some of the other New Year's Day in and around January 1st fixtures. But after this, hey, let's talk about the excitements of the freshly opened transfer window.
You're listening to the Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power.
Hey, transfer window, it's open. In fact, even before it had opened, Sami Nasri was on his way to the London Stadium, presumably because he was out of contract, so they could have brought him in whenever.
He's been training there for ages.
Really?
Yeah.
Did I know that?
Well, it'd gone a bit quiet because Sami Nasri is not the Sami Nasri that he was a few years ago.
No.
And he was still a name. He has drifted to the margins somewhat.
Okay.
And also, they chose a peculiar time to announce it. They announced it about 6 o'clock on New Year's Eve, which must be it was almost as if they were trying to hide it.
And a peculiar photo.
What was the photo, Lindsay?
A lot of side mouth.
Is that just
Popeye-esque?
Right.
Lindsay's demonstrating side mouth for the benefit of the listeners.
But I just think that's naturally. That just comes with the player, I think.
It felt more prominent.
Okay.
I think it's quite impressive that he managed to make it back to the Premier League, albeit for half a season. But he was a Turkey? He was an Antalyaspor.
Antalyaspor. Yeah.
At his age, I didn't think players sort of returned to the big leagues after what he's been through.
There was still bigger news across town at Chelsea, where they announced they signed Christian Pulisic for $58 million, but then immediately loaned him back to Borussia Dortmund till the end of the season, the 20-year-old becoming the most expensive American football player, comfortably exceeding the 20... Do you know who the previous was?
American?
Yeah.
John Brooks.
Damn. Horncastle with the knowledge.
Wow.
Mind is a lethal weapon.
They love
John
loaning
Brooks
out
paid...
Players,
do you know who bought him then? For how much?
Wolfsburg, no?
For...
24 million.
20 million. Anyway, all right, so Pulisic going to Chelsea at the end of this season. The German papers, Bild in particular, called this crazy 64 million euros on a positionally limited player that as a substitute most of this season has stagnated.
Well, it's interesting that his place in the Dortmund side has been taken by premier English talent, Jadon Sancho.
Absolutely. All right, but anyway, to get another take on what this move might mean for Chelsea, we've dialed up Raphael Honigstein.
I wouldn't perceive it as madness. I think it makes sense on Chelsea's behalf, especially to do the deal now. But in Germany, I think they haven't quite realised just where the market is going and is likely to move in the next 18 months as well.
What do you see Pulisic bringing to Chelsea? Sarri says he wants a striker, but Pulisic certainly isn't that. He scored, what, 10 goals in the last three seasons?
Yeah, he's not a striker. He's the guy that operates on the wing or in the number 10 role and creates a lot of opportunities, plays the penultimate ball, plays the final ball, makes things happen in the final third. Still, you know, with one or two areas where he can improve, I think he's not quite as direct as some of the more prolific wide players. He's not quite as dangerous as yet. You know, doesn't quite have the consistent sort of presence and threat that you'd like. But he is still very, very young. And you're very welcome to look at a piece I did not long ago for ESPN, talking to some analytics people. They point to a lot of performance indicators that look very, very promising for him, even if it doesn't quite yet translate into goals and assists.
Are there off-field benefits with him, you know, given that he's a superstar in America?
He does open a door to the US. He's got a huge following there. It'll only grow. He is really Messi and Ronaldo rolled into one as far as the American market is concerned. He's an absolute superstar. Now he'll have even more visibility at Chelsea, and I think that'll be once again beneficial for both him and the club. With any ideas to build an extra following, to generate more income, there are some suggestions that, you know, Abramovich might be looking for some kind of outside investment maybe from America at some stage. I mean, all these things make a lot of sense, and he's still a very good footballer. So this is not just a sort of a cynical marketing ploy, but they're buying someone who can play good football and I'm sure will come good as well.
Dankeschön, Rafa, and frohes neues Jahr.
Ja, danke dir auch, mein Lieber.
Exactly. Raphael Honigstein, have you got a hot take on this? Anybody?
I was quite impressed with how excited Sarri sounded after the game yesterday about the signing.
Sarri hates the transfer window.
Is that a thing?
Yeah, well, he believes in coaching. He doesn't want to get involved in all that kind of stuff. There's a director of football for that.
At the same time, he would quite like to get involved in having a new striker by the sound of his comments.
Yeah, absolutely. I think big picture for Chelsea, there's a lot of speculation as to what this means about Eden Hazard's future. But I suppose if you look at the kind of age profile of the other wingers, Willian, Pedro, both 30, 31, their contracts are up at the same time as Eden Hazard's. Part of the kind of rejuvenation going on at Chelsea. Boy, could he do with, as he was saying after the Southampton game, someone who can get it done for them in the final 20 metres of the pitch.
Absolutely, absolutely. This is a smart move by Chelsea. He's a young, supremely talented player, no?
Yeah, and a highly coveted player, a player who's already being spoken about as potentially the United States' greatest ever footballer, despite the fact he's, you know, how old is he, 20 still?
20,
only got a handful of caps. A very exciting signing for Chelsea. I suppose the inevitable follow-up question is, what does that mean for Eden Hazard? Is Pulisic the Hazard replacement, or are they all going to rub along happily together? From a neutral's perspective, a really exciting player to have playing in the Premier League. And not all that surprising to see the German press up in arms, because you don't really get massive transfer fees in the Bundesliga these days. I mean, even Bayern don't spend that sort of money. And clearly, from the German perspective, spending that sort of money on a relatively untested player, even though he is, you know, clearly very, very good, probably does seem a little bit obscene.
I saw an observation on Twitter that in the last 18 months, Borussia Dortmund have sold about 200 million worth of attacking talent, and yet they're 6 points clear at the top of the Bundesliga.
Yeah. Mm. When you think of the players that they've sold, I mean, Pulisic, for example, effectively came through their academy. Others,
Aubameyang.
I mean, there's so many players that they've gone. Name some other ones.
Mkhitaryan.
Hey, very nice.
Oh, no, Mkhitaryan went early, didn't he?
He did come through Dortmund, didn't he?
Yeah, he would.
They sold Götze to Bayern and then got him back cheap.
Shinji Kagawa.
There's another. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're saying. You laugh. That's incredible scouting, that was. It's like with Pulisic, because they went to watch some other US kid in the under, 17s or something, and they ended up seeing him and thought, let's bring him over.
What about Lewandowski then? That's another one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's done all right, hasn't he? Could have been at Blackburn Rovers. Was it with Big Sam?
Could he have gone to Blackburn
Rovers?
Was
it not the Icelandic volcano that stopped him coming over or something like that?
That's a great story.
If it's true.
Was he a replacement for Rocky Santa Cruz?
Big Rocky.
It was a big rumour, wasn't it, that did stop him? I just can't keep track of all of Chelsea's loaned out players. Whoever's got that job of keeping track of everybody is going to be very busy.
Mm.
Got more loaned out players than anyone else, haven't they? Yeah.
They have. I think it's 28, although it might be 29 with Pulisic. It's a lot, effectively.
Does it count, though, when you buy a player and then loan him back to the club? I tend to think that's a different kind of loaney, isn't it? He's not just been farmed out to Vitesse Arnhem. I mean, yet. That may yet await, perhaps next season.
Leonid Slutsky will be so excited.
None of us have mentioned...
Is he Vitesse Arnhem manager these days?
And he's taken the two Berezutsky twins as his assistants, and they've just started yesterday, I believe.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Wonderful.
They've just got the coaching licences, and now they're in the, mid-season training somewhere.
It's mid-season, is it?
Yeah.
Right, okay. Of course it's mid-season,
Winter break training, whatever they're doing with Vitesse, who are, I think, they're fifth in the league, about the same as last season.
Right. we haven't mentioned Callum Hudson-Odoi yet. And a lot of people, there was a much hand-wringing over the fact that, once again, a young English talent was being ignored for an expensive foreign import. But they play on opposite wings, don't they?
I thought Pulisic was on the right and then Hudson-Odoi on the left, no?
I think
then these modern attacking midfield players, they're all very interchangeable,
but
aren't they?
With, as I think Sasha was mentioning, with all the aging wings they've got, like Pedro and Willian, you want a bundle of young.
Yeah, and I think you look at the Bundesliga example, and one of the really striking things this season has been the use of young English players like Jadon Sancho, like Reece Nelson at Hoffenheim, and these guys who are being told they're not ready to play for their Premier League clubs are getting chances in Germany and doing brilliantly. And you wonder whether at some point that approach is going to trickle across to the Premier League, because these players clearly have the talent and just need opportunities to play.
All right. It'll be interesting to see if Pulisic will become the first bona fide American superstar in the Premier League. I was interested to read Duncan Alexander.
Clint Dempsey. Yeah, can he rap like Deuce?
Mm. Yeah, to be fair, Clint's up there, isn't he? Yeah. Here was Duncan Alexander getting to the real nitty gritty. 40% of all the goalkeeper goals in Premier League history have been by Americans.
Oh. Did you know that?
So 2 out of 5.
I guess it was that Brad
Friedel
and Casey Kelly.
Tim Howard, wasn't
it? Tim Howard, right. Yeah.
Someone sent me a trivia question the other day, and it was to name the 8 highest scoring Americans in the Premier League history. I won't bore you by going through all the answers, but it's very, very difficult.
Cobbie Jones.
No.
Okay.
Let's not do it, because that will take literally
Brian
forever.
McBride?
He is in there, yeah.
Okay. Okay. There's another one from Duncan. 3 of the last 6 American goals in the Premier League have been own goals. It's remarkable, isn't it? Other exciting transfer news, just while we're on the subject.
Tammy Abraham?
What's happened to him?
Probably going to Wolves.
Oh, okay, but it hasn't happened yet. But you think he's going to go to Wolves?
Yeah, I mean, that's the big rumour coming out of Molineux.
Fresh out of Aston Villa?
Yeah.
Well, he's done
Chelsea
well,
to us.
Yeah.
He's done very well. I mean, we definitely need some more options up front. So
right.
He would be very welcomed.
Excellent.
Cesc Fabregas to AS Monaco?
Yeah. That was another big one.
Now, that hasn't been confirmed yet.
He did seem to be saying goodbye. If I'm reading his body language and his Instagram posts, where he seems to be waving at fans and saying, 500 appearances in this league, it did seem to be Cesc. Moving on.
Right, and he'll team up with his former Arsenal buddy Thierry Henry there, of course. Mm. Thierry was very much based his coaching philosophy thus far on fielding youngsters who've mostly never taken the field before in a professional match.
Yes, mainly because almost half his squad is injured.
Right.
And the players are coming back slowly, but no sooner does one come back than someone else.
How do you see Cesc fitting in there?
I think he'll fit in very well. I mean, Monaco are just crying out for senior players who know what they're doing.
Right.
And, we know they've got a squad full of talented young players, but I think that the injury blight that has affected them has just shone a light on the fact that a lot of these players just aren't ready. And Monaco appear to be quite deliberately targeting experienced players. I mean, they seem to be close to signing Naldo, a Brazilian centre-back from Schalke, who's 36.
Cheeky Naldo.
Cheeky Naldo. Fabregas as well falls into the same bracket. And yeah, I mean, they're in pretty dire straits, Monaco. So I think they're trying to get some wise old heads in there to try and sort things out as soon as possible.
Freshly beaten 2-0 by the bottom team in the league, their neighbours Guingamp.
Guingamp, who made possibly the most exciting signing so far. Papi Gilabogi, 72 days late at Sunderland, has signed with Guingamp until the end of the season.
That's brilliant news. So
all of these are linked to Chelsea.
Yeah. And non-Chelsea transfers, Ramsey to Juventus, is that happening?
Well, I was going to ask James Horncastle. I was going to finish off on that one, but away you go, James.
Yeah, I think this is actually very credible.
At the end of the season or in January?
I think more likely at the end of the season. Yeah, I mean, he would follow in the footsteps of John Charles and Ian Rush. Mm. He's certainly the kind of profile of midfielder that Juventus like, in terms of midfield
frequently
runner,
injured.
Gets into the box, frequently injured, yeah, like Sami Khedira, and scores goals. But I think a lot of money being asked by Ramsey, and I mean, part of the inflation that is at Arsenal being a Premier League player, but you know, when Juventus are now paying $31 million a year to Cristiano Ronaldo, I don't think they feel too badly about.
But do you think that's a move that would work?
Yeah, I do. I mean, he's 28. I think he perhaps hasn't been able to show all of his ability on a consistent basis because of the injuries. But I think it's a classic Juve move, someone who's available for free in the summer, someone who's gathered a lot of experience over the years, played a lot of Champions League football, won FA Cup, scored in finals for Arsenal. I think someone that they see as being useful. So, yeah, why not?
Ah, Christmas. The time of generosity. Great food, terrible television, even worse jumpers, and a packed Premier League fixture list. And nobody does generosity at Christmas like Paddy Power. We're giving money back as a free bet on at least one game in every round of fixtures. Nobody's going to be paying out as much this Christmas. Except maybe Man United. You'd be a turkey to bet anywhere else. Paddy Power. Enough of the nonsense. Applies to first bet on all losing. Goal scorer, correct score and what odds. Paddy bets on the match. Max refund £10. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
On Spotify, smart speaker and podcast platforms everywhere, this is the Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media.
Who's excited about the top four race?
Woo.
Woo.
Woo. Come on, James.
You.
Woo.
What about you, listener?
Ric Flair.
There we go. Now, of course, this is exciting because Chelsea only drew on whenever that was, Wednesday. Man United won in their clash away with Newcastle. So it's now only 6 points. It was, what, 13 points between them and the top four about 3 weeks ago. Now just six. And as we've heard, Chelsea are running out of kind of forward momentum because they don't have a striker they can use. Giroud's out injured. Man United and Newcastle make it 4 wins from 4 under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. 14 goals scored in that time. Now their first clean sheet in 8. Romelu Lukaku roaring back. And also a certain Alexis Sanchez. This is quite worrying for their top four rivals, no, Tom?
Yeah, it is. I suppose you'd temper that by saying that of the matches they've played under Solskjaer, you would have expected them to win all of those anyway. Perhaps not given the form they were in under Mourinho, but a team with United's quality should be winning those games.
Sorry to talk over you. I was just going to say, look at the matches that their rivals played over this festive period and how many points they dropped, the likes of Spurs and Chelsea, etc.
Oh, no, completely. And it's, you know, from a neutral standpoint, it's been great to see Man United back and playing the sort
United.
Of attacking football. Sorry?
I just say unless you hate United.
unless you despise United. Yeah, you know, it's been enjoyable to see those attacking players who we felt were being held back for so long suddenly allowed to play with a handbrake off and produce such thrilling performances. And, you know, I think Newcastle was the most difficult of the four games they've had so far. They had to weather, you know, some sticky moments in the first half and they came through it. And as you said, you know, been able to bring on Lukaku and Sanchez. You know, Rashford and Martial have clearly improved since Solskjaer came in. And it's, yeah, from United's perspective, it's very encouraging. I think, yeah, the only thing you would say is that they've not been properly tested against one of their big rivals. But, right, of course, next game up in the league is away at Tottenham. So yeah, that'll be a good opportunity to see exactly where they are.
That'll be a huge measure of their progress under Solskjaer, who is now the clear second favourite to get the job on a full-time basis.
I mention Jonjo Shelvey's ridiculous kick on Pogba. I think that's the sort of challenge. You think Pogba is very lucky to actually stay fit there. because, I mean, I think Shelby was complaining after it, but this is almost textbook John Joe Shelby. Just red mist descends and he just flies in. And I thought he could have really badly injured him there.
Absolutely. No question, Sash. Meantime, Chelsea with that goalless draw with Southampton. What's happened to Chelsea? Do you have a view, Lindsay?
They seem really limited lately when I've watched them. And everything seems to have got narrower when you're watching Chelsea. I don't know why they're not using their width more. I feel like the injuries aren't helping. The fact that they know that they haven't got this reinforcement in terms of strikers, they rely heavily and way too much on Eden Hazard, and whether he's playing well dictates whether they play well. I wasn't surprised when it turned out to be a draw with Southampton. I didn't think it would be goalless, but when it was a draw, I wasn't overly surprised. I think they are just lacking that cutting edge. I think, how excited are they for the top four race? I mean, you look at the players right now, and I would wonder how hungry some of them are looking. But right. is that part of this busy winter fixture period? But some of them look quite lethargic, I thought, in that match against Southampton.
Also, given the kind of historical precedence at Chelsea, if every manager seems to fall out sooner or later with the club over transfers, how worried should Chelsea fans be about the tone of Sarri's remarks about the fact that he hasn't been getting reinforcement?
I don't think so. No? I think that was just him being him. I think he fobbed it off because he's just genuinely not that interested. I think the most telling comment was when he was asked about whether he would bring one of their loan players back to help them up front, like Michy Batshuayi, for example. And he just said, look, we're looking for players that have different characteristics. We're looking for players with different characteristics to what Michy Batshuayi has. I had a little bit of sympathy for him in the Southampton game in that if you look at the options that he's got up front at the moment, Pedro's injured, Willian went off after 37 minutes, Giroud was out, and the only kind of player he had had on the bench who was an attacking player was Loftus-Cheek, who's not 100% fit. So in those positions where he's looking for a spark, he hasn't really got it. My sort of question mark about Sally would be kind of lack of rotation at this kind of period of the season, which is much more intensive than it was in Italy when he was, you know, even then accused that his lack of rotation slowed the team down. They had periods where they weren't burnt out, but they were sort of on a very kind of low flame. And, you know, I think that might end up coming to cost them. Let's not forget as well, I mean, he was complaining about he has no time with the players to train them, you know, and that's been the story of his time at Chelsea. He got there, Conte took the first 2 weeks of training. You know, as soon as he arrived, he was jetting off with the team, having to scramble together in the transfer window. And I think their performances were not as good as the results at the start of the season.
Right.
And I think to some extent we're seeing that a little bit catch up with them.
Do you know who's had no time with his team? Ralf Hasenhüttl. He's only just arrived and he's getting a point there.
And he has no problem with rotation either.
Yeah, he's not complaining about transfers.
He was very, very happy saying after the Chelsea draw, yeah, I rotated with my eye on this game and, you know, they defended superbly and got a great point.
Yeah, they even rotated his keeper. He brought in Angus Gunn for his Premier League debut, son of the ex-Norwich goalkeeper Brian Gunn. So literally son of a gun.
A quite literal son of a gun. Yeah.
Excellent. And weirdly,
Angus Gunn has already got one more clean sheet than his dad Brian Gunn ever managed at Stamford Bridge.
So, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Saints, anyway, get a point at the Bridge but still drop into the bottom three because Burnley won at Huddersfield. Burnley with two wins in a row for the first time since September. This is also the first time they've won a game this season after going behind. And all this after Joe Hart left the starting 11. Everyone's been saying how well he'd been doing, but is that not the case, Sash?
Goals against, 42. And that's not counting them. Well, 41 he conceded. Right. Keaton comes in. He's just a much better goalkeeper. Okay. I mean, even in the previous game, I kept a clean sheet. One of the goals was scored after he was very confidently coming outside his box, doing a header. Yesterday, no mistakes. Mm. And they seem to understand what he's doing. I think there is much greater synergy with the defence, where I didn't really get the sense that Hart and defence were one.
I think he's had flashes for Burnley where he looked like his former self. Mm. But I think there is always going to be something missing now with Joe Hart. And I felt I was there for the game against Everton. And wow, they were shipping goals so early on. 5-1, yeah. There was the Digne free kick. And I just felt that from the moment he was stood over the ball, Joe Hart didn't seem to have that area of the post covered enough. It just looked like it was going to go in. You know, those moments where, as a defensive unit, they must be thinking, well,
I think he's always had a problem with his footwork. He basically doesn't get across the goal as a keeper. Like, you see Alisson today standing on his feet with a one-on-one with Aguero. I think Hart will be in a heap on the floor in that situation. So I'm not sure how he was coached when he was younger, but he just doesn't get across his line. He doesn't move his feet.
Burnley, anyway, with Heaton back between the posts, among the big winners of this this incredible run of four rounds in 2 weeks. Other teams that have done particularly well, Crystal Palace, who are fresh from a 2-0 win away at Wolves. Lindsay, were you there?
I was. I mean, 2-0 was flattery in the sense that the game as a whole was pretty dire.
Right. But they scored two goals.
They did score two goals. Mm. It is in black and white. One
it
at the very
late
end.
On, wasn't it?
Yeah, penalty for Milivojevic. But I mean, the main thing was that they were completely bossing possession at Molineux. You know, Wolves are there. They're on their home turf. You'd think that they would be on the front foot. But they really weren't. They weren't very impressive. And Wolves tend to do this against the more expansive teams, the teams in the top six. They've done so well. They've done very well on the road, certainly in London.
Right.
You know, taken points, 3 points from Chelsea, did well against Arsenal, well against Manchester City. You know, you look at all that and you think, brilliant. And then as a Wolves fan, it's so frustrating because then you watch them against Huddersfield, Watford.
But for Palace fans, Lindsay, I mean, this is terrific. Are they now out of the relegation battle? There's, what, 6 points clear?
I don't think they're out of the relegation battle, but this has done them so much good because I think there were worrying times. It was looking like, where is the goal going to come from? And then to score two against Wolves would have given them a great confidence boost. Ayew as well to get his first goal for Crystal Palace.
Yep, Jordan Ayew. Yeah, they are 4 points clear of Newcastle and effectively 6 points over the bottom three and three teams between them and the drop. So it's looking a lot better.
Yeah, I think just to say about Palace, I mean, the only thing they've been missing this season is goals. I mean, look at their defensive record. Only Liverpool, Chelsea and Spurs have kept more clean sheets in the league this season than Palace, which is
really
quite a startling statistic. Mm-hmm. And because they've not been able to rely on any of their strikers to score goals, they end up playing with Zaha and Townsend up front, which they're both capable of doing, but which I don't think gets the best out of them. And what we saw at Wolves was a shift to a 4-3-3, Zaha and Townsend playing wide where they want to be. And, you know, Jordan Ayew's goal record at Palace has been pretty dreadful, but that's him off the mark now.
Yeah.
Sounds like they're going to look perhaps to try and bring someone else.
Wan-Bissaka was great again as well. He had a very good game.
Mm.
Also, I mean, over a very attritional Christmas period, six games, they've got the fifth best record in the Premier League. So
over the Christmas period?
Over the Christmas. So to come through that and to do that well.
Who are the four teams above them? Who are the other big kind of Christmas winners?
Okay, so Liverpool with 18 points.
Right.
Spurs 15, United 15, Chelsea 13.
All right. And then Palace. Who are the big losers then over the Christmas?
The really interesting one, bottom three.
Everton?
Everton, Bournemouth and Huddersfield, obviously.
Right, Everton, that's the thing. They've conceded 12 goals in five games, failed to score in their past two. Latest one saw them lose 1-0 at home to Leicester. What's going on at Goodison?
Seems to have hit the wall and they're making so many mistakes at the back. Maybe it's the result of the Derby defeat, because I think that would have been very demoralising. But even in the very poor game against Leicester, the goal that Vardy scored with two awful mistakes by Everton players, particularly for Keane, who just lost the ball. And again, there are signs of nerves from Pickford again. And 20 games in, Marco Silva's mojo seems to be going.
And is this a repeat of what happened at Watford? We never have seen him long enough, have we yet, to know whether it was, you know, everybody already at the time was thinking it was the rumours of him going to Everton that unsettled the Watford squad. But
and now
was
he
it?
Is at Everton.
Was it?
Mm. It might have been, I don't know. 26 games he managed at Watford, 23 he's now reached with Everton. Tom, any thoughts on Everton?
Yeah, it would be interesting to see how Silva reacts because it looked like he'd settled on a formula that was working in the autumn where he decided he wasn't going to play with a striker. He'd put Richarlison up front and for a few games that seemed to work quite well. And then as Sasha was saying, that Derby result was when everything started to go wrong and their results since then have been absolutely appalling. Mm. I don't think you can pin all of that on that result at Anfield, but that was obviously the turning point. And yeah, this is one of the great mysteries about Marco Silva. midfielders. He's a coach who often goes in and makes a great impact. And so far in English football, we've not seen him have to come up with a plan B and then a plan C and really develop a team. And that's what he needs to do now if Everton are going to get back on track.
Now, James, you also mentioned there among the teams who really struggled across this difficult time, Huddersfield, I'll say, 8 defeats in a row. And also, these were games that presumably they will have marked out. David Wagner will have circled in red as these are must-win fixtures. They lost all of them. The latest one coming against... they lost to Fulham, and who was it beat them? Was it Burnley this time?
Yeah.
Burnley, right, yeah. So I don't really have a point about Huddersfield. Is there a point about Huddersfield?
It is their worst ever league run. They've lost 8 league games in a row for the first time ever. And I thought David Wagner sounded a bit like he knew the game was up. They've taken 10 points from 21 games, and no Premier League team has ever survived having only taken that number of points in that number of games. And the spin he tried to put on it was, oh, that's the sort of challenge that Huddersfield thrive on. You know, we like to be the first team to have achieved the unachievable. But it feels like this is a season too far for Huddersfield.
They are 8 points from safety. What has happened over the last week or so? Arsenal got back to winning ways after their defeat to Liverpool. A big victory over Fulham.
Shout out to Wobi.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought, again, he looked really, really impressive there on the left. Obviously, his ball for the ghosting Xhaka for the first goal. Again, I thought he actually played quite well against Liverpool in the 5-1. And Liverpool haven't conceded that many goals this season when they were actually properly opened up. Yet, it was his pass at the Emirates. And it was also his ball to Maitland Niles. And I just thought he seems to find the space quite well. Also, he was on the weaker flank of Fulham, and he had Kolasinac also helping him attack as well.
A stronger flank.
I think the right flank is particularly weak, and he took really good advantage of it. And I thought Iwobi looks really, really good at the moment.
Excellent. All right. Spurs also were victorious 3-0 at Cardiff. It was relatively straightforward. There was an absolutely extraordinary match between Bournemouth and Watford. It was 1-0, and then 13 minutes later, it was 3-3. It was extraordinary. Was anyone actually across this one live?
I was watching it and keeping across the updates whilst I was at Molineux, but the interesting thing is that then there were no more goals in the second half.
So
I mean,
often
how that
way,
happens.
Though.
It looked like Troy Deeney was having one of his flash moments as well. I mean, when he's on it, he's on it. He was sort of... anticipating everything that was happening. I thought his second goal in particular showed that. It was really difficult for Bournemouth because they every season have a spell where they just go missing for a while and then they'll come back again. I don't think they'll end up in particular trouble from this, but I just think that Eddie Howe needs to try and get consistency across the whole season, because every single time there's a campaign, you know that there's going to be that stretch where they'll drop points and they'll be the team that's getting beaten week in and week out for a while.
I think the way the calendar worked out is actually really weird, because they're currently in the middle of a run where they play top 6 10 times out of 19 games. It's this period of 4 months. And of course, they've lost all the 6 games against the top 6. But against the rest of the league, it's 2 wins, a draw and 2 defeats. And I think this is becoming, I think, a bit of a problem for Howe, because I think in the last maybe 25 games against top 6, he won 2 and I think lost the rest. You know, if I were the owner, I possibly would be asking him some questions about this, because, you know, you should be able to break through that barrier, because I think against the other sides, they do reasonably well. Okay, the game yesterday was ragged, but I thought Stanislas at right back was quite inspired. You know, didn't defend so well, but going forward, it looked quite good. So I don't think, you know, what's happening there is particularly disastrous. I don't think they're going to be in any danger of sliding towards relegation. But he needs to learn to play against the top 6 somehow.
I've not realised how bad their form was. They've only won 2 of the last 11 in the league. And yeah, to pick up on what Sasha said, you look at some of the beatings they've taken. I mean, 4-0 against Liverpool, 5-0 against Tottenham, 4-1 against Man United. And you know, the expectation with Bournemouth, I think, seeing how well they played over the first months of the season, was that this was going to be the season they sort of kicked on and got a little bit closer to the top 6. And although, you know, clearly I still think you could say they're having a positive season, when it comes to those direct head-to-head matches, they don't look any closer than they have been since they came up.
This is the sort of squad as well, though, that does suffer when you've got injuries, and you know, you look at the amount of injuries that they've got. Adam Smith, you know, Cook, they've had lots of different people out with big injuries, and they haven't really got that backup, have they? And I think it just gets exposed at times throughout the course of a Premier League season. It is tough.
Also, on Tuesday, or was it Wednesday, West Ham played Brighton. It was a 2-2 draw. Brighton were 2 goals up and then let that lead slip, but still been a pretty positive time for them. They are 10 points now off the drop, unbeaten in their 3 games over Christmas and New Year. Excellent stuff there from Chris Hughton.
I was about to say, great to have Arnautović back.
Ah,
what a guy.
That's so true.
He's just so much fun to watch. And his tussle with Dunk throughout the whole game, I thought was great. He popped up with those two goals. Of course, then after the game, he's always just funny to listen to. And I think, his return to West Ham, and I think West Ham looked really knackered. I think both teams looked really knackered. I think most West Ham fans would have taken us at this stage of the season, particularly given how they started.
Well, there you go. 10th they are, and 10th they will remain this weekend because it is FA Cup and some pretty exciting fixtures in there. We picked out one or two, listener, that you might like to enjoy over the weekend. So why not stay with us and we'll be right back with that after this.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsors of Melchester Rovers. Find out more at roytherroversofficial.com.
FA Cup, everybody. It's the third round, you know, Tom. Hey, exciting news. Those fifth round replays, you know, where the little team force a second match, get a huge payout, which transforms their club, and they get a shot at further glory, maybe take the big team back to theirs.
Yeah.
That's all gone.
Oh.
All gone this time. FA Cup fifth round replays will be removed from this season's competition. One season earlier than planned. This is to help avoid fixture congestions after six Premier League clubs reach the Champions League and Europa League knockout stages. Anyway, there are some games this weekend, and there's plenty of giant killing potential in there. I know you've all got at least one fixture that you're ever so excited to tell us about. Who'd like to start? So,
I'm just going to say Norwich against Portsmouth.
Okay.
The only reason I'm going to say that is because it's happening at Carrow Road, where recent results, James, you've had 4-3 defeat to Derby, 3-3 against Forest, 4-3 against Millwall. There's just goals, James. Goals at Carrow.
Norwich Portsmouth.
There you go.
It is a fixture list that starts on Friday with Tranmere's clash with Spurs. Mickey Mellon's Tranmere, sort of Oxford City in round one, edge Southport in a second round replay, etc. So on. Spurs, by the way, have never won a trophy under Pochettino.
You think someone might have mentioned that?
Could this be the one?
He really needs one.
I think so. Anyway, that's huge. Tom, what have you got?
Quite like the look of Frank Lampard's Derby against Southampton. Derby obviously going well this season, six in the Championship, and have already shown a bit of giant killing pedigree in the Carabao Cup by knocking out Man United and then giving Chelsea a bit of a scare in the following round. And you suspect that Ralph Hasenhüttl will rotate his starting lineup again. Mm. I doubt the FA Cup will be a massive priority for Southampton this season. And it's at Derby, so potential slip up there.
You're a big fan of Harry Wilson as well.
Big fan of Harry Wilson, yeah. Keeps on banging the goals in.
Mm.
And they're all absolute screamers.
Sash?
I have a couple. QPR Leeds just sounds really tasty.
Okay.
Really tasty there in West London. And the other one is...
But you could see that in the Championship.
Yeah, but it's the FA Cup. It's the
I
FA
like
Cup
games
it's magic
when
the
it's
Cup.
Not, you know, where there's some kind of interspecies romance thing going on.
Okay, James, if you want interspecies romance, Woking Watford.
Okay, yeah, Woking out of National League South, so that's what, sixth
Division
tier.
Six against Watford. If Watford rest players, Woking are quite, I don't know, growing up in the 90s, Woking seemed like quite a big name in the FA Cup from the lower leagues. You sort of saw them around this time in the third round of the FA Cup, so I quite like them to do well at Kingsfield.
Woking, of course, have pulled off a famous third round upset in 1991, beating West Brom, who were then of the second tier, 4-2, and they were in the seventh tier. Hat-trick from Tim Bazzaglo, former computer worker of some description, who also played cricket for Gibraltar.
All right.
Which takes some topping.
It's all written down Tim here. He should have been a lumberjack, no?
Bazzaglo.
No, Tim Bazzaglo.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
I quite fancy Luton getting something from Sheffield Wednesday.
Ooh. Steve Bruce is Sheffield Wednesday.
Yes, but he's not in situ yet because he's on holiday or prior engagement.
Is he going to have their entrance and banisters repainted, I wonder?
Who knows? But yeah, I don't think that they'll quite have found what's, you know, their feet in terms of what's going on under Bruce, because obviously he's not there, but the coaching staff are. And Luton have been very impressive, so I think that could possibly be an upset. And I have to mention, of course, Wolves against Liverpool. Mm. Wolves have had great success against Liverpool in the Cup last time. Played very, very well against them. And I think now Liverpool's eye off the ball. You know, this
you
result
reckon?
Tonight that we've talked about endlessly about Manchester City, the title race. Have Liverpool got it in them to have a run in the FA Cup as well? Probably not. They need to focus now on the job at hand. 4 points. They've got to protect that.
I think Liverpool should play as much of a reserve team as possible.
Really?
In this, because if you look longer term, if you look at April, I know maybe I'm thinking looking a bit too far ahead here, but if Liverpool do progress in the FA Cup, and maybe if they do progress in the Champions League, then April becomes a complete nightmare. They'll be playing every 3 days. Fixtures will get moved. I don't think they have a deep enough squad, so I think they should make a decision now.
Sasha,
FA Cup's not for them.
Mugging off the cup.
You're mugging off the cup.
I would at this stage mug off the cup.
He needs a trophy.
I would mug off the cup.
James, wow. Liverpool have lost 10 of their last 25 games in all competitions in January.
Well, so this is a great point, because first two seasons, Klopp and January, and actually February, he had no idea what to do. That his first season, he was absolutely bewildered by all these fixtures. Again, lack of training. He can't train. How do you prepare for them? Second season, he didn't crack it. And only last season have Liverpool actually started sort of shaping the season in such a way that they can get through January, primarily by getting knocked out of the League Cup as well, but also rotating the squad appropriately.
Wow, what a time to lose 2-1 to City. Sorry.
The only thing I was going to say is that Nuno will probably make changes as well. I can see that happening.
A race to the bottom awaits us.
So basically, Monday night, Tom Forst again.
All right. Listen, other games you might want to watch instead. Blackpool's clash with Arsenal is interesting, not least because they've already met this season in the Carabao Cup, of course. Arsenal just about edged past the third tier Tangerines. 2-1 at the Emirates. This one, of course, will be back at Bloomfield Road. Lichtsteiner scored last time. Lichtsteiner and Emil Smith-Rowe put the Gunners 2-1 up. And then Guendouzi got sent off. And all sorts of other things. Tangerines currently lying 10th in League 2. I think have had 4 defeats in the last 5. They're not in form. Be interesting to see how that one goes. Newport County, who have some history of cup upsets. Remember last year when they did Leeds and then took Spurs to a replay? They'll be inviting Leicester back to their Rodney Parade digs. See how that goes. Fulham taking on Oldham. West Ham, Birmingham. Do you know who? I'd forgotten this or hadn't ever noticed, but Gary Monk's in charge of Birmingham. Did you know that? Gary Monk's in charge of Birmingham.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't.
He's unbeaten in 7, Sasha. He's just outside the playoffs. Excellent. It's the Gianfranco Zola derby, that, of course. Palace taking on Grimsby.
Just to go back to Newport, I once attended an FA Cup game at Newport. Newport and Swansea.
Okay.
South Wales derby. Someone threw a coin at a linesman.
Oh.
Is it a Goldie-looking chain?
I'm not sure the culprits were ever apprehended. And I interviewed Lee Trundle. This is when I was training to be a journalist. I interviewed Lee Trundle after the game in the tunnel, which I was really excited about. He's got a really squeaky voice, which I was surprised by.
That is always disconcerting when sportsmen have squeaky voices.
Mm.
Goldie-looking chain. I did an FA Cup game involving Newport County.
Me too. Man United. Wasn't it Newport Man United?
Strangely, I got the Wrexham one.
Ah.
Yeah. But it was a draw, which, you know, is nice because that's what Goldie-looking chain were all about.
Yeah. Hey.
That's all the cup fixtures we've got time for, apparently. Although there's also Newcastle Blackburn. United
Premier League throwback.
Hmm? Yeah, I like that, Newcastle Blackburn. It's proper sort of Premier League years, isn't it?
Yeah.
Nice. Saturday at 5:30 then, Tom. That's... Make a note of that. Rafa says he'll pick a strong side for it as well. Blackburn beat high-flying West Brom on Tuesday. Before that, they'd lost their previous 3. That's all you need to know, really, isn't it? United are taking on Reading. That's an early game on Saturday. Do you know who's in charge of Reading now? Anybody?
I think you say Man United.
Well, it's Jose someone, isn't it?
Would have been
Jose
Manuel
Gomez.
Good
knowledge,
yeah, Gomez. Jose Gomez.
Had it still been Yapstan, then that would have been
Solskjaer,
Yeah, from the treble days and all that.
Mm.
But it's not.
It's not, sadly.
Okay. Anyway, there's loads of other matches. Bournemouth taking on Brighton and that. Good. Are you looking forward to it, Sasha?
No, I'm looking forward to Coupe de France.
Oh. Why?
Because they're also... in the last 64, if you like. But the great thing about Coupe de France is that in one of the previous rounds, they become the biggest cup tournament in the world. They have teams from French Guiana, Martinique, Guadeloupe, Réunion, Mayotte, New Caledonia, and Tahiti.
And they fly to... Do they have the same kind of thing of like summer home, summer away?
Summer home, summer away. And instead, the French FA pays for the team to fly on the other side of the world or brings those other clubs over. And one of those teams survived to this weekend, and it's Aiglon du Lamentin. They are from Martinique, and they will be playing against Orléans and they've been training at Clairefontaine. And of course, Orléans are the team that narrowly lost to PSG 2-1 in the League Cup recently, right, with an amazing goal line clearance in the last minute. So I think for me, that is the tie of the weekend.
Do they have replays in the French Coupe?
I don't believe so. It goes to penalties.
Oh, that's a shame, because I think probably Orléans wouldn't mind a trip back to Martinique.
Yeah.
Well, do you know what? With that, let's get some odds on FA Cup fixtures and more besides. Producer Ben has been speaking to Paddy Power.
Thank you, Jimbo, and hello to Lee Price from Paddy Power. Now, Lee, we have in no way prepared two versions of this pre-recorded section, so let's start with City. What are their odds now to retain their title?
We have a title race. Hallelujah. This has made the prices very, very tight now for the league title. Liverpool do remain the favourites to win the league despite losing last night. They're 10-11 though, so that has drifted slightly. City are into 11-10, so the exact opposite to win the league. This one's going down to the wire. Spurs, they are still in the mix, remember, 22-1.
On to the FA Cup then, and let's stick with Liverpool. What's going to go on when they head to Wolves on Monday night?
Well, Wolves are my betting bogey team this season, actually. They seem to turn it on against the big boys, but then struggle in games they're supposed to win, like against Palace the other night. You would expect Liverpool, though, to rotate after the City game, but with this match being on Monday night, it should allow the squad to recover. For that reason, Liverpool remain odds-on to win this, 5-6. If you do fancy a Wolves Cup set, it's 11-4.
Spurs, as we've already talked about, didn't have the best of form against lower league opposition in the Cup last year. What's going to happen when they head to Tranmere?
Well, I'm sure Pochettino will be going all guns blazing here, if only to silence those wizened football critics say he has to win something at Tottenham. Tranmere are a massive 14-1 to win tonight, or 11-2 to earn a replay. If you want to hedge your bets, you can back the double chance, which comes in if Tranmere avoid defeat, and that's 7-2.
And finally, Lee, give us the quadruple, please, on Fulham, Burnley, Huddersfield and Leicester all going out this weekend.
Oh, Jesus, Ben, I've updated my CV. If this comes in, you could wipe out Paddy Power. The odds for this quadruple are around 960-1. The safest leg, we think, is Huddersfield losing at Bristol City, which is 5-4. Or your biggest challenge, according to the odds, would be Oldham winning at Fulham, which is 9-1. Newport County are 17-2 to beat Leicester, and Barnsley are 7-2 to see off Burnley.
You can find out those odds and more at paddypower.com. All prices are accurate at the time of recording. It's 18 plus only. BeGambleAware.org. And when the fun stops, stop. We will return on Monday with Michael Cox, Daniel Story and Jack Lang.
Woof.
Okay. We might chat about the Asian Cup, it says here. When's the Asian Cup starting? You'll know this,
I think,
Sasha.
It's on Saturday.
Is it?
Yeah, it's in the UAE.
Is it? That you see, I've... Oh, well. Okay, what have you got planned? Are you going to go and see a game, Sash?
No, my next game is Brighton-Liverpool next week.
Nice, very welcoming.
Definitely. Yeah. It's very nicely set up. It's also about 50 yards from the station, so you literally come out and there you are in the stadium. And hopefully Liverpool can get back to winning ways.
Let's see. Will the curse of January continue? Away to a Brighton side who, as we mentioned, have been doing very nicely, thank you. Lindsay, what have you got planned? Anything exciting?
I think I've got the weekend off now. I was meant to be going and doing Bolton against Walsall for the FA Cup, but I haven't been very well over Christmas and I'm bowing out, just trying to get myself better. So I think...
Is it anything contagious?
Yes. So hopefully you'll all okay tomorrow. and then I'm at Chelsea, my next match, Chelsea-Newcastle next week.
Ah, right. Okay. James Hawkins, you're probably flying off to all sorts of exotic places.
No, I'm having some me time this week. James.
Strong.
Okay. I didn't know we were allowed to mention that.
Given the song that James was playing us earlier.
Okay. Tom.
Well, I can't follow that. I'm playing football this weekend.
Great.
Joined the Sunday League team.
All right. Got my boots back on.
Redmond Rovers.
Okay.
Play in the Edmonton District Sunday League, North London. Oldest Sunday League in the UK,
is
apparently.
That right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. If you
according to Wikipedia.
So. Nice. If you're in Edmonton, do stop by.
Please don't. Please don't.
Okay, all right then. Listen, I do hope you enjoy yourself this weekend and find us again here on Monday. Many thanks to everybody for being with us. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com. And don't forget to check out our other football podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else you get your audio on demand. Supporting your team can be a beautiful thing, but then come the injuries, the goal droughts, and the downright disastrous defeats. That's a little bit like life, really, and here at the Totally Football Show, we believe we should all support each other the way we support our team, through the good days and the bad. And that's why we're continuing to work with CALM, the Campaign Against Living Miserably, a charity dedicated to preventing male suicide. On average, 12 men take their own life every day in the UK, so that's your starting 11 and your manager every single day. And part of the problem is that many of us still feel uncomfortable talking about mental health and suicide, and this can often stop men from opening up and getting support when they need it the most. So if you're worried that someone close to you is having a tough time, check in with them and let them know that CALM is there. Every day from 5pm till midnight, CALM provide a free, confidential and anonymous helpline and web chat for any man who needs support. Visit thecalmzone.net to find out more about CALM.